91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today we'll hear about the business of film critics as discussed by Dan Hudak, Skip Sheffield, and Ruben Rosario on the 4th South Florida Arts Beat Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable. What's hot, what's not, 3D, sequels, comic book adaptations, South Florida art houses, the future of film criticism, and much, much more. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Miami-Dade Arts Calendar features Deborah Margol. Please stay with us to catch the conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. On today's program, our film critic Dan Hudak continues his summertime tradition of gathering a few professional film critics together to discuss their business. Today, we'll feature the South Florida Arts Beat annual Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable, featuring notable writers from MiamiArtZine.com and SkipSheffield.com.
With no shortage of trending film industry topics as we near the end of yet another explosive summer movie season, the time is ideal for the 4th annual Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable. Joining me are FFCC members Skip Sheffield and Ruben Rosario, each of whom brings a unique and diverse perspective to the discussion. Skip Sheffield was with the Boca Raton News for 30 years before it folded in 2009, and he now runs SkipSheffield.com in addition to contributing to the Boca Raton Tribune and Atlantic Avenue magazine. You may have read Ruben Rosario's work anywhere from the Sun Sentinel to the Miami Herald to, yes, even Hudak on Hollywood.com. He's now a regular contributor to the Miami Sun Post, MiamiArtZine.com, and other local publications. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Ruben, your pick for best movie of the summer is?
It's still my favorite film of the year is How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Really?
It is.
I don't know if people who are familiar with your work, you do so many indie films, so many foreign films, they might be surprised for you to say How to Train Your Dragon 2. Why is that?
If they know me well, then they probably won't be surprised because I'm also an animation junkie. And I'm a fan of the director, French-Canadian director Dean DeBlois, who co-directed Lilo and Stitch, and as well as the first How to Train Your Dragon. And the reason I liked it so much is because it really is a swashbuckler in a kiddie flick drag. It has an emotional depth that, for all its virtues, the first one didn't quite have, even though the first one is actually a very solid adventure in its own right.
I liked it a lot, too, and I really like the fact that it's a sequel that exists because it's the genuine next story for these characters in these characters' lives. So many times we get sequels that just feel tacked on, that feel kind of superfluous, but it's like, okay, 5 years later, things are good, but now there's another crisis that has to be addressed. And it just felt like it needed to happen as opposed to just being another money grab.
Correct. It feels like the second chapter in a trilogy as opposed to a sequel to an already existing work. So this is envisioned as a series of films that coexist with each other.
Skip, what's your choice for the best of the summer?
I hesitate to name any particular film, and I was rather shocked when I looked at the releases for 2014, and many of them I just have not seen because I did not want to go. For instance, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's been getting great reviews, and I probably should have gone to see it, but it was a dark and stormy night, and it was down in Aventura. And there's all kinds of stuff, as you well know, Dan, out on the road, there are dangers. So I missed that one. I didn't see Hercules, and I don't care. I didn't see Expendables 3. I didn't see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. However, I did see Chef, which is partially filmed in Miami. And I just love that movie. And I also loved a movie called Land Ho, which comes out this Friday. It stars a couple of old guys you don't know. One of them 72, the other 65. They go to Iceland. And the writer-directors are young 30-something, a man and a woman. And it's almost an improv movie, going to Iceland, see what happens. But it is very life-affirming. It was a big hit at Sundance. The New York Times raved about it. And it is actually endorsed by AARP. And because I am of a certain age, I love a movie that will make an old guy feel good, like life isn't over yet. For personal reasons, I really like Budapest Hotel. From my childhood growing up in hotels and moving around, I just thought it was a lovely movie.
I agree. I love the style of Grand Budapest Hotel. Land Ho was a trip. Literally, yeah. It's Erland Nelson is one of the stars of the film. He is a doctor in real life. He's just kind of a crazy character. Paul Einhorn is the co-star of the film. He's someone who you might recognize. He has a familiar face. And the two of them just literally go through Iceland. It's a nice little movie, a series of vignettes from one moment to the next. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and the friendship is quite organic. It developed. The one guy, the younger guy, is a professional actor from Australia. And the older guy is still a practicing ocular physician, which is very impressive. Yeah.
That film is called Land Ho. It's in theaters today. We're with Ruben Rosario from Miami Art Zine and Skip Sheffield, skipsheffield.com. Two film critics, members of the Florida Film Critics Circle. Your worst movie of the summer, Skip?
Oh, my goodness. Probably the ones that I didn't bother going to. I didn't think of a worst one because I like to dwell on the stuff I like. I guess The Other Woman was pretty lame, but I rather like quirky little movies like The Fault in Our Stars. I enjoyed that. Boyhood, I thought, was a remarkable achievement. Expendables 3, even without seeing it, I can say I hate it.
Ruben, what's your worst of the summer?
I'm so glad you asked me that, Dan. As you well know, there's directors I hate, and then there's Michael Bay, which takes that hatred to another level. What was surprising about Transformers Age of Extinction, which is the fourth entry in the franchise, is that it feels so phoned in. Even at his worst, you feel a certain commitment to the trash. And here I felt like he was phoning it in. And that was actually surprising. It surprised me. So it made it an overlong movie even more unbearable.
What do you mean phoned it in? Because I didn't much care for it either. But I didn't think of it as phoned in. I thought of it as overwhelming and just exhausting to sit through.
It feels like he's going through the motions, especially in the third, in Dark of the Moon, even though I think it's a terrible film, there's a sense that he's really thinking carefully about his set pieces. So for those of you who saw Transformers 3, there's a sequence in Chicago where Shia LaBeouf is trapped in the building and the building is crumbling. And that sequence is actually really well crafted. The closest the new one comes to achieving something like that is a sequence at a tenement in Hong Kong where there's a fight between two characters as they're falling down the tenement. So I thought that was actually clever. But still, I still feel that he was actually going through the motions. So I felt a hackdom of a hack.
But the other infuriating thing about The Last Transformers is you're in Hong Kong, you're trying to escape. Rather than climb into Bumblebee or Optimus, which you've been doing the entire movie, you get in this rinky-dink little truck and try to drive off yourself. It's just illogical, literally just stupid things like that. It just make no sense. It's like, what are you doing?
Logic is not a strong suit with Michael Bay.
I would say my worst of the summer is Tammy. I know that there is a good starring vehicle out there for Melissa McCarthy. She is incredibly talented, but she has yet to find it on the big screen. I don't count Bridesmaids. She was a supporting character. But as a lead, The Heat was funny. But as the sole lead of a movie, Melissa McCarthy has yet to find her movie. And you guys can call me crazy, but Edge of Tomorrow, as my favorite movie of the summer, without a doubt, this movie is an absolute blast. Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt, set in the future. The day keeps resetting. He has to go to war with the aliens. I had a blast with this movie. Did either of you get a chance to see it?
I did. I saw both, and I think you're being too tough on Tammy and you're praising Edge of Tomorrow too much. I enjoyed Edge of Tomorrow. It wasn't love at first sight. So the first hour, I thought I was zoning out. I felt that the Tom Cruise character was singularly unappealing. He's a media whore, but it's an uninteresting media whore. As the movie progressed, and I got into the vibe of this Groundhog Day by way of a video game aesthetic, I actually began to be engaged by the film. So I'm very mixed about it. Tammy doesn't quite work, but it almost won me over because it's less of a crude comedy than its marketing campaign suggested. It's more of a character study, and those are kind of rare when it comes to a studio film. And I thought the supporting cast was very strong, especially Susan Sarandon.
All right, we got about a minute to go in this segment. Ruben, quickly, your disappointment of the summer is?
By far, it's Jersey Boys.
Really?
Yeah. I thought that Clint Eastwood is a fine director. He was all wrong to adapt this material. The musical on stage has pizzazz, it had energy, and that's completely absent from the finished product. It's not a terrible film, but it is very, very disappointing considering the source material.
And I
agree with you on that. I saw the stage show twice, right. And I've always loved the Four Seasons. I've met Frankie Valli, I've interviewed him, but Clint missed it this time. Sorry.
Was that your biggest disappointment of the summer, Skip?
So far. I'm sure I'll be disappointed more.
When we come back for the second segment of the Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable here on South Florida Arts Beat, we're discussing the surprises of the summer, movies we're looking forward to later this year, and more. Stay tuned.
Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Thanks for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Ed Bell with you. And now we return to the conversation between our film critic Dan Hudak and his guests.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. Dan Hudak of HudakOnHollywood.com here with Skip Sheffield, SkipSheffield.com, and Ruben Rosario from MiamiArtZine.com. It's the fourth annual Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable here on Arts Beat. Skip, you started life in the newspaper business. You wrote for the Boca News for 30 years. The paper went down. Now you're a blogger. How are you handling the difference?
Well, I've been getting into the blog more all the time. I use Facebook to publicize my writings. I still do appear in print in the Boca Raton Tribune and Atlantic Avenue magazine, so it's not done yet. But I love the immediacy of a blog, and you can key to it on Facebook, get all your friends, and there's also a site just in Boca Raton for people who've been in Boca a long time, and there's about four times as many people on that site as on my personal site. So I can be assured of a certain amount of readership, and people react to it instantaneously.
How long have you lived in Boca?
We moved there in 1960.
Wow.
I was 12 years old, yes. And I started writing on a freelance basis for Boca Raton News when I got my master's degree in English literature. And I went up to the managing editor and I said, gee, I got this master's degree. I'm pretty smart. I've been an actor. I've watched a million films in my life. Why don't you give me a try as a critic? And he said, okay. And I would drive in my little old car all over South Florida, down to Coconut Grove, up to Palm Beach. And it takes years and years to build a readership. And that's what I have now. So when I do it on the blog, people know me by reputation. A lot of them think of me as some crusty old friend.
And Ruben, you've always been online. You've been published in print publications, but you've always been online. I'm curious to know what you saw the profession as when you started and how it really is.
Back when I was a student at the University of Puerto Rico and learning the craft of criticism from local critic Luis Trelles, I thought this is actually something I can do for a living. And I think I'm pretty good at it. My teachers say I'm good. My friends like my writing. They say it's fun and punchy. So why not? So when I got the position for Miami Sound Post 4 years ago, this was actually something that was offered to the director of the Miami Cinematheque, Dana Keith. And Dana said he would not have time, but he knows the right person. And he asked me, and I said yes. And 4 years later, I'm still doing it. But I learned quickly enough that this isn't actually a breadwinner job. So,
you can say that again.
it's a loss of innocence, if you will, for me. But I do it for the love of it. And I don't think I can stop. Even when I'm not reviewing a film, I'm still thinking in my head about what works and what doesn't.
Skip, has anything changed over your 30 plus years as a professional critic that surprises you?
Yes. The fall of the studio system. Critics used to be treated like kings when I started out as a little snot-nosed kid. There would be hors d'oeuvres and drinks and all kinds of cool stuff, and each studio had a personal rep locally in Miami, and they became your friends. Now it's to whom it may concern. It's a bunch of little kids at advertising agencies, and they're changing from one week to the next. You don't know whom to ask for art. And it's very disorganized by comparison. Yeah.
Ruben, what has surprised you about the business?
I would say how the blogosphere has taken over. What happened in Entertainment Weekly really took me by surprise. If people, for listeners who don't know, Owen Gleiberman, who for me is one of the best film critics writing out there in the U.S., was fired from his job. And the people doing the reviewing are bloggers who are paid in prestige. So they're not being paid. So that for me is like someone threw the rug from under my feet. And it is disturbing. So, yeah, it's depressing.
The interesting thing I've observed over the last few years, regardless of the fact that print publications are losing their critics by the numbers as we go, there are times when we go to a screening and they say, if you like it, if you didn't like it, tweet your reaction with this hashtag, right? But then what the public doesn't know that we are exposed to constantly is that on almost every screening invitation, we're also told no blogging, no Facebook, no tweet, no nothing. So the studio wants it both ways from the critics sometimes, not always, but sometimes. And it's like,
I think what you mean is that in terms of those screenings, they want the general audience, the fanboys, to actually tweet about it when, you know, in a way that doesn't bother us, who cannot bring their phones in the theater. So,
yeah, I give the remarks to the studio rep. I'll do that, a thumbs up or down. I must admit, I still don't tweet. I've had a million invitations. I do enough stuff online, and I just can't see doing that too.
Well, Skip, it's nice that you mentioned tweeting, because actually this is actually something I tried out this weekend with Guardians of the Galaxy. I didn't write a review for it, but what I did instead is, like, knowing that a lot of people were anticipating it and people were drooling over it, let me be the dissenting voice in a very aggressive way. So I did Twitter on Friday morning, and then bam, 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 one after another. I believe one of my tweets was snarkity, snark, snark, hashtag Guardians of the Galaxy, snarkity, snark, snark, snark. So basically,
I love it.
Yeah. So it was, and that's a way to actually experiment doing something a little different, especially when you're the dissenting voice in the film.
Yeah. Good point.
So Guardians of the Galaxy was one of my surprises of the summer. I was surprised by how much I liked it. I know the Marvel hype machine was in overdrive, and they promoted that movie brilliantly, but I was nonetheless surprised by how much I liked it. I was also surprised how much I liked Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I didn't expect to like at all, because who wants the darn Ninja Turtles back? And, well, here we have them. And it was actually entertaining. What else surprised you guys this summer, Ruben?
It was funny, Skip, that you mentioned Hercules, because that was actually a movie that looked so terrible in the previews that I went to see it just to make fun of how bad it was. And it turned out to be a lot of fun, much to my surprise. Brett Ratner is a Miami native. His body of work is uneven. You know, that's putting it very gently.
That's putting it very nicely.
Yeah. But he's done some decent work before. The first Rush Hour and Red Dragon were actually pretty decent films. The rest of it is not as accomplished. So I was expecting something really crappy and CGI driven, and it really wasn't. That was a very old fashioned adventure that really mixes the humor and the tongue-in-cheek with more serious aspects. And I thought it was really well done. The cast was really good. Dwayne Johnson is actually solid in it, but he is actually very ably supported by a very strong supporting cast, including Ian McShane, who is fantastic in it. It's so much fun.
We're talking with Ruben Rosario with Miami Art Zine and Skip Sheffield, skipsheffield.com. Skip, your surprise of the summer?
I was surprised at Chadwick Boseman, the star of Get On Up. I actually met James Brown in person and had like an audience with him. And Chadwick is not a thing like James Brown. He's the opposite physically. He's tall and thin. Brown was short and squat. Boswick is sort of elegant, and James Brown was anything but. However, what he captured was Brown's spirit, his just crazy desire to entertain. And that's an elusive thing. And to pull that off as such a different physical type, I think, is amazing.
Yeah, I thought Michelle Williams did a similar thing in My Week with Marilyn, capturing the essence of Marilyn rather than looking exactly like her. The movie you're looking forward to the most, still to come later this year. I got a couple choices for this, but Skip, what are you looking forward to?
I'm wondering what the Sin City thing is going to be like. Is that out already?
Sin
it's
City
coming
2.
At the end of August.
Oh, yeah, Sin yeah. City 2, A Dame to Kill For.
Talk about snarky movies. I mean, it's a real cheap thrill, I think, and I enjoyed the other ones, and I'm hoping it'll be just as trashy as they were.
Yeah, I love the first one, too. It's about 10 years ago now. Ruben, your most anticipated movie?
By far, it's Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice. Which is based on a Thomas Pynchon detective novel set in 1970. It reteams Anderson with Joaquin Phoenix, and there's an amazing all-star cast in it, including Owen Wilson. That sounds like a lot of fun. There Will Be Blood is my favorite film of the past decade, so I'm really looking forward to see what he's going to do with that genre.
I totally agree. I love There Will Be Blood. Paul Thomas Anderson's one of my favorite filmmakers as well. I thought it was a misstep with The Master, but Inherent Vice looks phenomenal. I will also add Christopher Nolan to my favorite filmmakers list. Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey. The trailer looks phenomenal. And there's so much surrounding Gone Girl, David Fincher's adaptation of the beloved novel starring Ben Affleck, who looks like he's up for the acting role. Yeah. I think that's going to be phenomenal as well. Interstellar opens early November. Gone Girl is October. Inherent Vice is September.
It's going to premiere at the New York Film Festival, but I believe it's December.
Yeah. So the New York Film Festival is September, though.
Right. So it's going to be seen there, but I believe it's in November or December when it's opening.
Right. Yeah. The opening date is still to be determined. We can expect something later in the fall because no doubt they're positioning that for an Oscar push.
Right.
Gentlemen, sit tight. We still got one more segment to go. We're going to discuss reviewing in South Florida, the local art houses, current trends in movies, 3D, sequels, etc. So one more segment to go here on South Florida Arts Beat with the Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable.
Please stay with us. The conversation will continue on South Florida Arts Beat right after these messages. Tune to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken presents A Word on Food, and our arts calendar today features Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Now, we return to our final segment and the discussion of all things film with our film critic Dan Hudak and his guests.
Welcome back to the Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable. We're joined by Ruben Rosario from MiamiArtZine.com, Skip Sheffield from the Boca Tribune, and SkipSheffield.com. Gentlemen, it's one of the, I would call it, responsibilities of a critic to be in touch with the smaller films, get it the attention that a smaller film might deserve, and allow it to be seen by a bigger audience. One way we do that is through the local art houses. Your favorite art house in South Florida, Skip?
Well, I'm preferential to the living room theaters on the FAU campus. They're new, they're comfortable, they serve good food, the parking is cheap, and the people are nice. A sentimental favorite is the Gateway, because it's really old school. We have the IPIC theaters in Boca. We have the movies of Del Rey. That's where I saw 100 Foot Journey just last week. And then we have the good old Shadowwood, which is down at it, on its heels, but out in West Boca. They show indie and foreign stuff. And thanks to my friend Jan Mitchell, I get some offbeat movies that generally are shown at the Gateway and other art houses, and I can see them online, which is a great convenience.
Ruben, I don't want to call you out or answer for you, but you are wearing a Miami Beach Cinematheque shirt right now.
So I am. I'm not supposed to have favorites, but it really is the best place to watch an art house film in Miami. I mean, and I think I should still say that all the art houses are doing a fantastic job. Robert Rosenberg at Coral Gables Art Cinema, Kareem Tabsh and Vivi Martel at O Cinema, Wynwood at O Cinema Shores, Orlando Rojas at the Tower Theater, and Trey DeLellis at Bill Cosford. They're all doing programming and a very eclectic array of international, independent, and in some cases classic films. And I think they're, I really think they're bringing in people who may not have been going to the art houses before the big boom of a few years ago.
Is there anything you would like to see the art houses do that they're not currently doing?
I would say more revivals. I know Trey DeLellis at Cosford is showing some classic films on 35mm because they can. I know Orlando Rojas is showing some Italian films and from their new 4K projection. So, yeah, I would say I would like to see some classic films because I think there are some areas where I feel like I should see should have seen these films and I haven't.
The Cinemark Palace in Boca Raton is participating in a classic film festival. It's the only theater in Florida doing it. I should mention that. I don't know all the titles, but I think it's a really neat thing. They do have an older audience there that can appreciate that stuff, but they've got all the college kids there too.
So I know the one in Davie is showing some classic films too. Sundays and either Tuesday or Wednesdays, like at 2 o'clock and 7 p.m., I know they showed The Godfather trilogy recently, and that's a great thing. I think the multiplexes should be doing more of that as well.
Yeah. When we discuss trends in movies that are coming out on a weekly basis, I think we see a lot of 3D. I think we see a lot of over-the-top action. I think we see a lot of gross-out, ribald comedy. Any trends that stick out to you, Ruben, that are kind of jarring?
Is what's been bizarre this year is that the sequels, I mean, coming out are just as good and in some cases even better than the originals. It's shocking. Down to the last movie I saw was Planes 2, and that turned out to be fairly decent.
Really?
Yeah. it's shocking that these sequels are coming out and you expect to be more of the same, and then turned out to be very well made.
Talking with Ruben Rosario with MiamiArtZine.com, Skip Sheffield, SkipSheffield.com. It's the 4th annual Florida Film Critics Circle Roundtable here on South Florida Arts Beat. Skip, any trends jump out to you?
3D does not jump out to me because I am blind in my left eye. I do not have binocular vision. And so 3D is just an irritation for me, and I'm missing part of the image. I have never had full sight. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know what 3D is. So to have this artificial effect try to duplicate the reality is just an annoyance for me. So I'm sorry.
I can name with my two hands the movies where 3D was essential of the most recent ones. And it's not mostly, in most cases, it doesn't really add that much.
Yeah, it's often superfluous. Yeah. One trend that I wanted to point out is low-budget horror movies. Movies made for less than $10 million that open to $20 to $30 million are in that range, so they're immediately profitable. Blumhouse Productions is behind, I believe, Sinister and the Insidious movies and the Purge movies. Really low-budget movies, but great financial successes. Could this be kind of a model that gets copied by others? It's a very copycat industry, after all. Skip, what do you know?
I'm a great admirer of the classic Japanese horror films, the monster movies. In fact, I remember seeing Beast from the 20,000 Fathoms when I was 6 years old. My mother had forbade me from seeing it because she thought I'd get nightmares. But I snuck out because I was friends with the projectionist, and I saw the movie. And then I confessed to Mom that I had seen it, and I said, no nightmares. And ever since then, I've loved cheap monster pictures. The Sinisters we have and the Saw movies and that sort of thing, I find kind of gross.
What have you liked in that vein recently, then?
I can't think of anything that's knocked me off my feet lately in the monster department.
Godzilla was a disappointment, though.
Yeah, it was. I think the original was, in all its cheesiness, was more enjoyable.
Well, going back to horror, I know a movie from a few years ago that was billed as a psychological thriller, but turned to be a bit of a horror film was Martha Marcy May Marlene. And that made my top 10 that year. And that's a survivor of a cult. I mean, she runs away from the cult back to her sister. But she brought that brainwashing with her, and it's how that very tenuous family dynamic develops over that period. And it was like a cry of, here I am, from Elizabeth Olsen, who's actually talking, going back to Godzilla. So it was a shame to see her in Godzilla because she can be so good, and she was so wasted in the film.
Yeah, and now she's going to be in Avengers Age of Ultron,
yeah, I'm
playing
looking forward
Scarlet
to that.
Witch.
Yes.
That opens next May. That'll be next summer's discussion. Yeah. Do you guys have any idea where film criticism is going from here?
That's a real good question. It is being systematically removed from newspapers. It's just not deemed important enough. And our friend Rene is an exception to the rule. And he has fought hard to continue doing what he's doing. But he has to do a bunch of other things, too. You have to do everything but mop the floor to keep a film critic post and actually be paid for it. So the future of film criticism is in blogging. Yeah. And it's for people who simply love film,
correct,
who know about film, and who are driven to write about it and gab about it.
Which suggests it may not necessarily be a money-making profession for aspiring critics.
Exactly. It's a lot like being a musician, and I am a musician also. Occasionally I get paid. But I don't expect to,
exactly,
always. And I do it because I love it. I love to write. I love to gab.
Ruben, what do you say? Because you've always been that online blogger.
Right. Even though technically I haven't had a blog, but my reviews are basically online, available online. To add to what Skip said, I think Connie Ogle also reviews quite well for The Herald. And yeah, it is a shame that we're not seeing more newspaper critics. We're seeing fewer of them. I think the future holds more bite-sized reviews, and if someone like me who likes to write in it's at 1,000-word reviews, it is very sad. It's very sad that that's the way we're going. There is a place for capsule reviews, but I think there also should be a place for more thought-out critiques of films, art house and mainstream alike.
Yeah, I don't think a Roger Ebert would rise as a blogger today. I don't know.
Even though he was brilliant at doing it,
yeah,
in the last few years of his life.
Right.
That was actually, by the way, a great summer film was the,
I know,
and
I must have missed the screening or something because I really wanted to see that one.
It's very well done. Life Itself, the documentary by Steve James, who made Hoop Dreams. It's about Roger Ebert and his life and career. But it feels kind of self-serving for three film critics to talk about how great a documentary about a film critic is.
Well, we have to talk about the craft of the documentary. He just happens to be about a film critic and a very unique film critic. So you can separate what we do from what we're reviewing, you know? I think you can make the distinction, I think.
I will add, and if you guys want to chime in on this, go ahead. I think the only surefire Best Picture nominee that we've had released thus far this year is Boyhood. Either of you disagree with that?
I think Snowpiercer is a dark horse. I think Tilda Swinton would probably get a supporting actress nomination, fingers crossed, as well as some of the technical categories. But yes, in terms of Best Picture, Boyhood is lovely. It's a fantastic film. And I think you'll be seeing it get more love from critic circles than at the big awards, because year's not over. I know the studios have big pockets and they have a lot of big guns.
Fall is the time for the
comic. Yeah, so I think Boyhood's going to do better with Film Critics Awards at the end of the year than it is. But I am looking forward to seeing Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette get some recognition for the performances. They were both phenomenal.
Ruben Rosario, Skip Sheffield, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan.
Skip Sheffield writes for the Boca Raton Tribune and Atlantic Avenue Magazine. You can follow him online at skipsheffield.com. Ruben Rosario is a syndicated film critic who writes for the Miami Sun Post and MiamiArtZine.com. For more information on the Florida Film Critics Circle, visit floridafilmcritics.com. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak, is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at hudakonhollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the offs and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot-do-de-do-ya-do-do.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is Frito pie. To get to a Frito pie, you naturally must begin with the corn chip, beloved by so many, known as their now trademark protected name, Fritos. To have my mind trigger on the subject of Fritos only took a quick scan of a roadside advertisement I'd seen while coursing down the streets of Miami. Soon after, I was searching for the origins of the chip I'd eaten since childhood's days. Once again, we get to set the Wayback Machine. If you have not yet become familiar with that Deus Ex Machina, you must see the cartoon movie Mr. Peabody and Sherman. Your life will be imminently more complete, I guarantee you. In 1932, a hungry young man named C.E. Doolin entered a small San Antonio cafe and purchased a bag of corn chips. The bag of these cost him all of 5 cents. But being that it was 1932, we know there was a thing going on in our land known as the Great Depression. A nickel was not a slug back then. And to add insult, there was a price war going on in San Antonio in the budding business Mr. Doolin was trying to build. And for him, it was the ice cream business. C.E. Doolin loved those chips and decided to see if fortune could be found moving from something smooth, creamy, and cold to crunchy, crispy, and salty. He went back inside that cafe and made some inquiries, if we can make some artistic assumptions with history. I wasn't there that day, so I hope you will allow me to ponder a bit. One thing we do know is that he found the creator of the recipe and the owner of that fledgling business. The man was sick of chip making and wanted to return to his home down Mexico Way. Mr. Doolin borrowed the necessary $100 from his mother to get not only the business, but also the recipe for making those golden crispy chips, along with 19 retail customers and an old handheld potato ricer. I have yet to crack why the ricer was needed, but I have not given up. C.E. went to work. So did his ma. During the night, they toiled in the family's home kitchen, making and bagging up the product. During the day, the young entrepreneur hit the roads of Texas, selling them out of his Model T Ford. I was only obliquely aware of the snack known as a Frito pie on the day I was taken to the Texas State Fair by our great friend, as well as great chef, Dean Fearing. He was successively shocked, dismayed, and then elated at this lack of education on my part. But quicker than you can drain an ice-cold Lone Star beer on a hot Texas July day, Dean was getting my wife, Janet, and me each a Frito pie to address that hole in our lives thus far. Dean happily explained it. You make chili, and in this case, you do make it with beans. Some Texans are annoyed at beans in their chili, brother man. You mix that all up. You have some shredded yellow cheese ready. Slash open your bag of chips. Dump on the chili. Hit it with the cheese. Plastic fork stir, and boom. You might not have known this fact, loyal listeners, but Fritos, and even the barbecued-flavored Fritos, are vegan. Until you hit them with a chili, that is. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Guilty Pleasures. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And we welcome back to South Florida and South Florida Arts Beat, Ms. Deborah Margol, Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Welcome home, Deborah.
Thank you so much, Ed. Great as always to have the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
And you're going to tell us all about what's going on in Miami-Dade County.
No doubt, chock full again. The summer is just as hot and active as any other time of year here, so I'm going to start right away. If it's the third Friday of the month, you know it's going to be Big Night in Little Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone who hasn't checked out these great free festivals over at the Little Haiti Cultural Arts Center, you're really missing out. Tonight's show features Shlu Shlu Miami All-Stars. This is the beloved classical dance music of Haiti, Compa. And they are among the longest-running groups in the history of Compa, marking now nearly 50 years as a band. And it's also actually a double bill featuring Ayabombe, which is an 8-member Racine Haitian music group. Racine, of course, is roots music of Haiti, roots music and dance. Between sets, DJ Mac is going to be spinning, and in the gallery, there's a great show, the Guantanamo Memory Project. And again, this is at the Little Haiti Cultural Center, Big Night in Little Haiti. Free, you got to get out and go because this is one of the best, most fun nights of every month. So check it out. Also, tomorrow at the Deering Estate, this is in Cutler Bay, featuring its free Play Day, P-L-A-Y Day, which stands for Preservation, Learning, Adventure, and Year Round. And they're offering free admission all day long from 10 to 4 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday. And the activities throughout the day are going to include historic house tours, an echo art workshop in the Carriage House classroom, rain barrel and water conservation workshops, tropical fruit displays and sales, and just a wonderful educational and fun day for the whole family. And that's all day tomorrow, Saturday the 16th, at the Deering Estate at Cutler. Here we are again for now the 18th annual Brazilian Film Festival of Miami. There are going to be screenings throughout town at Miami Beach Cinematheque, the Colony Theater in Miami Beach, and other screens throughout town. This is really an extraordinary festival of the best of Brazilian film. And that's running tomorrow, August 16th, for the following week through August 24th. Also tomorrow and Sunday at the Olympia Theater, that's the Gusman Center downtown, Miami Lyric Opera is presenting La Boheme, Giacomo Puccini's brilliant four-act opera. That is, of course, part of the standard Italian repertory and one of the most frequently performed operas worldwide. And that's being performed Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 4 p.m. at the Olympia Theater, Gusman Center, downtown Miami. A couple of closings. So if you haven't had the opportunity to check these out, your time is short. And that includes the production of The Whale on stage at Gable Stage. It's closing on Sunday the 17th. So be sure to check out this award-winning off-Broadway play. Really phenomenal, much celebrated, highly awarded off-Broadway play worth checking out at Gable Stage, but get there by Sunday. It's also closing weekend of Midlife 2, The Crisis Continues. This is on stage at Actors Playhouse at the Miracle Theater, and that's closing this Sunday the 17th. It is also the final weekend at the Perez Art Museum Miami, PAM, of the Caribbean Crossroads of the World exhibition. This features over 400 objects examining the exchange of people, goods, ideas, and information between the Caribbean Basin, Europe, and North America. The artists featured and the work featured includes works by Gauguin, by Winslow Homer, by Wilfredo Lam, Armando Reverón, and works by contemporary artists as well, including Alora and Calzadilla, Janine Anthony, José Bedia, Edouard Duval Carrier, and Nari Ward, among many, many others. And is being presented at PAM through Sunday, August 17th. This is a really exciting local boy coming back home to share his riches of talent with us, and that's at the Jewish Museum of Florida, FIU. They're presenting their mixer at the museum on Thursday, August 21st, from 5 to 8 p.m. the brilliant filmmaker and documentarian Billy Corbin. Some may recognize as the director of such films as Cocaine Cowboys and The U, and he'll be showing clips from some of his films, talking about the documentary process, his career, and his upcoming future projects. And this is free and open to the public at the Jewish Museum of Florida, FIU, next Thursday. RSVPs are required because space is limited, but how great to have an up-close and personal with Billy Corbin, so go check that out.
Sure.
Next Friday, it's Hot Nights Cool Jazz at the Bass Museum of Art on Miami Beach. This is their summer series celebrating some of the best local jazz, and it's a great locals destination for culture, conversation, and music. And that's from 7 to 9 p.m. Next Friday's concert features Fernando Ubari Quartet, and that's at the Bass Museum of Art on Miami Beach. While we're in jazz, because I know you love that, Ed, and I do too.
Yeah.
But the Sunshine Jazz Organization is presenting the Nicole Yarling Quartet next Sunday, August 24th, from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. at the Miami Shores Country Club. This is a wonderful and, again, brilliant local artist who's just made a name for herself across the world, the Nicole Yarling Quartet at Miami Shores Country Club. That's next Sunday, August 24th. And finally, History Miami is presenting a phenomenal exhibition right now, American Sabor, Latinos in U.S. Popular Music, which examines the profound influence of Latino musicians on traditional genres of music in the U.S., including jazz, R&B, rock and roll, and hip-hop. This traveling exhibition from the Smithsonian presents the musical contributions of U.S. Latinos from the 1940s to the present on view at History Miami. That's right here in downtown Miami at 101 West Flagler Street. And that should give people a couple of things to get out and enjoy.
I'm exhausted. Where can we find out more information about these and other events?
Please always check out our website, miamidadearts.org. That's all one word, miamidadearts.org.
Deborah Margol always has great information for your consideration. She's the Deputy Director of the Miami-Dade County Department of Cultural Affairs. Deborah, thank you so much. Great weekend.
Thanks so much, Ed. And go get out there and enjoy.
Yes, indeed. And finally, here's to Henry Stone, who together with his very creative artists gave the world decades of great pop music and led the way in creating a definitive Southern soul sound that later became known as the Miami Sound. He was among the last of a passing breed of do-it-yourself music industry legends who changed the musical marketplace forever. Be on the lookout for a documentary about Henry Stone, tentatively titled The Record Man, that is set for release in early 2015. This much-anticipated film will cast the work of Henry Stone in the gold of legend. We hope to see it in the schedule of the Miami International Film Festival next year. It's being produced and directed by Broward County's renowned filmmaker Mark Moorman, the producer and director of the insightful documentary about yet another American music industry icon, Tom Dowd, and the language of music. Nanu Nanu, Henry. Big thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, our contributors, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Deborah Margol. This wraps up South Florida Arts Beat. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Have yourself a great weekend.